We now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings, as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
Many people have seen ghosts and reported incredible experiences from the realm of the spirit world. Who can tell what this young man will see as he falls deep into a trance?
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Brian Alvarez.
Good evening, everybody. Brian Alvarez here on After Dark Radio. It is Friday night, February 27, here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network. And for those of you on the wrestling side who've been listening to all of the other shows this week, you're well aware that we have been revamping our whole studio here. We have moved to a six-day-a-week schedule on Sports Byline USA and Sirius Satellite Radio for Wrestling Observer Live. And the interesting thing about that is that's the first time right there that I have played the After Dark Radio bumper since we installed the new board here. And I should have tested it because last night I was doing a show. And whenever you're installing new stuff, there's always, and I've had these issues all week, problems arise, as I'm sure many of you are well aware from installing many new things in your lives. And last night, I attempted to play a song on one of our shows, and guess what happened? No audio. Bunch of the songs worked, but for some reason, some of them didn't. And I didn't think about that before I hit the button to play the music today, so very glad it played. But the reason I mentioned it also was that song sounded really good. I don't know if it's the new board. I don't know if it's my headphones. I don't know what, but I thought the quality for that song was way better than I've ever heard it. So that's good news. All right, tonight, everybody, we've got quite the show here on After Dark Radio. If you've been listening to the Dark Matter Radio Network tonight, you've probably already heard my voice, as there was a replay earlier tonight. We had Captain PJ Spivak on the Dark Matter Radio Network, a show I did some time back. He's a pilot. He wrote a book about it, and a very, very interesting book. He was a very, very good guest, so hopefully some of you got a chance to check out that interview. Tonight, we've got a very special show as well. As many of you are well aware, my old producer, and hopefully future producer as well, Garrett, had to take a leave of absence. And I believe that Garrett's wife just had her baby, I believe, in the last week. So huge congratulations go out to Garrett. In his absence, the man behind our Facebook page, Andrew Lutsky, he took over. I didn't even ask him. I was just talking on the show about how the producer had stepped away. And the next thing I know, Andrew has contacted me, and he essentially said, I'm going to be sending you a bunch of information about potential future guests. And I thought, all right. Suffice to say, my After Dark Radio email bin is so packed full of guests that if Andrew is listening right now, I do have to apologize somewhat. I, honest to God, have not even contacted half these people yet. I am booked, I think, into April or May right now. And I still have to keep going through all of these that he sent me. So he is a hero. And the first guest, I believe the first guest that he booked, may have been Brian Kendrick last week, actually. But this guest tonight was, I guess they're all personal requests from Andrew Lutsky since he set all of them up. But Andrew wrote an article for culturecrossfire.com. And if you want to check it out, you can go up to culturecrossfire.com and search Andrew Lutsky, and you will find this story. It is called The Tina Resch Case. And you spell that last name R-E-S-C-H. It's called Unsolved Mysteries and Scary Stuff, Tina Resch. And he wrote this story about her, and he then proceeded to get a guest who could come on the show tonight and talk about this story. We're going to talk about the Tina Resch case because she knows a lot about it, this being Denise Roff, our guest tonight. And in addition to this story, we're going to talk about the paranormal in general. Because Denise Roff, the Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research, she's involved with the Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research. And if you want to check out their website during the show, it is SIPRinvestigations.com. Once again, that is SIPRinvestigations.com. And you can remember the SIPR because it's Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research. Exploration of the unexplained, it says right here. And she does ghost hunting. Not only is she a ghost hunter, but she teaches classes. Ghost Hunting 101. And what I like about Denise, this was taped earlier on here today, a couple of notes about this interview to get you prepared for the show tonight. Denise, first off, it was a very, very good interview, and she has an EVP that I'm going to play when she comes onto the program that is going to blow your mind. It will blow your mind. That I can guarantee. Denise Roff is a skeptic. She looks at everything from a skeptical standpoint, which I like because I do the same thing. But this EVP, it is a sound of a child singing. Now, I had some EVPs that I played on this show. And when you listen to those EVPs on the program, maybe some of you heard it right away. Maybe some of you didn't. Maybe some of you didn't hear anything. Maybe some of you thought, must have been this or it must have been that. It could have been anything. I'm sure everybody had different opinions about the EVPs that I played on this show. This EVP that I'm going to play when she comes onto the program, I am going to tell you this as a fact. Either there was a child in the room running and singing, or it was a ghost. There are no other options here. This is not static and maybe you hear something. This is not a weird sort of disembodied voice where if somebody tells you what you should hear, you'll hear it. This is a child singing. It is unmistakable. It is either a real child, and I don't know where the child would have been, why the child would have been in the room. I don't know any of the circumstances. It is either a real child or it is a ghost. There is no other option. It is as clear as day, and I am going to play it when Denise Roff comes on the show later on. We're going to talk to her all about ghost hunting, and we're going to talk to her about the story that Andrew Lutzky wrote on culturecrossfire.com, Unsolved Mysteries and Scary Stuff, Tina Resch. We're going to talk to her about that tonight. In the meantime, we've got a lot of news stories that we can get into today, and it is also After Dark Radio, and so that means the lines are open. Open lines for the next 20 minutes or so. The phone number is 855-478-4478. I would like to very quickly direct you to our website, which is afterdarkradioshow.com. And if you head up there, you can get everything that you need to contact me here on this program. The phone number, 855-478-4478, is up there. We have two other lines as well. West of the Rockies, you can call 425-488-0525. And if you are east of the Rockies, you can call 425-482-1686. My email, if you'd like to contact me via email, if you don't want to call in, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. That is Brian with a Y. At AfterDarkRadioShow.com. I am on Twitter at Brian Alvarez. I'll be monitoring that all night tonight as well. And, of course, we've got the email address up there for Garrett as well. Don't email Garrett for now. I do have to change that on the main website here. And we do have a brand new really, really nice website that is in the works that will be launching probably within the next couple of months. It'll be a big improvement over the very bare bones one that we have right now. But you can check out the Facebook page as well, facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow, if you would like to join us there. So let's start off with the phone calls. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, what's happening?
I want to talk to you more about the Brian Ladd picture.
More about Brian Ladd? What now?
Okay, I got a picture. It was the dark church picture, and I think it came true by what happened to me recently.
Something involving a dark church happened to you?
Not exactly, but I think you'll understand once I tell the story.
All right, tell me the story.
Okay, on Facebook, I was friends with this guy. He's the owner of Dark Shade Creek Films, which makes the Dark Shade Creek movies. And he used to get in my church, but supposedly he's turned atheist and was bashing Christianity. And what happened?
Now, wait a second. Hold on a minute. Why did that happen? Why did he turn heel on God?
I don't know, because he blocked me when I asked about my reasoning why it might be false on what he was saying.
Oh, that's no good. That's no good. All right, so he is now an atheist. Continue.
Right. Basically, I said the proof that Christianity exists is because we had Brother Jim at our church, and it showed that he could speak Hebrew through God. And also, there was a storyline in church involving the Masons where the pastor gave a sermon about the Masons, and all the Masons left the church being a secret society.
Now, backtracking a little bit, I've heard you tell the story of Brother Jim. Now, are you telling me that Brother Jim, without ever having learned Hebrew in his life, he can speak Hebrew through the power of the Lord?
Well, according to Jim, he can.
Oh, but you don't speak Hebrew, so you're not sure if he's telling the truth.
Right.
I see. All right, continue.
Right. And another thing that happened that was weird was during the Super Bowl, there's a girl that does like our entertainment, and she also blocked me on Facebook.
What do you mean she does your entertainment? What does that mean?
She, like, sings the church songs.
I see, I see. And she blocked you on Facebook?
I think she just deleted me, but I questioned the Super Bowl halftime show because it seemed a little bit satanic the way Katy Perry presents herself. I sort of stuck up for that.
Sure, yeah. So you suggested that the Super Bowl halftime game was perhaps satanic, and you have now been blocked.
Well, all I said was it had a lot of symbolism. I didn't really say it was satanic, but that's what I was getting at with that.
I see. She just ran with that.
Actually, she's a pretty prestigious person. She used to be the Maple Queen of Myersville, which is a pretty prestigious position.
The Maple Queen of Myersville?
Myersville.
Wow. That's pretty prestigious.
Well, when you're a queen, that's a pretty big deal.
That's a very, very big deal, especially in chess. She outranks the king.
Yeah, so, there's a Maple King, but I think she is more powerful than the king.
That's right. So what other dark church symbolism have you encountered in your life of late?
Well, I pretty much faced it all my life. I told you the story about the Masons leaving the church after the pastor gave a sermon when I was a little kid, and I noticed like about 30 people left the church after that.
Now, Ryan, it seems to me that you're starting to sink further and further down the rabbit hole of Brian Ladd. Are you concerned about this in any way?
Yes, because I think I showed you the pictures. One shows a fire and a date, so I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah, you may need some sort of spiritual advisement. Is there anybody at your church that you could talk to?
I was thinking maybe I could talk to Carl Stern because he's a police officer and he would know the right
That is a great say. Idea. Listen, Ryan, first off, I want to thank you very much for the call. I am going to contact Carl Stern because if there's one thing that I would like, it is for you and Carl Stern to have a discussion about these issues on this program. So I'm going to try to set that up and we'll have it on a future edition of this show. All right, let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, Brian. This is Danny Hernandez from Dallas, Texas.
What's happening, Danny?
Yeah. First off, I'll say what a tease you made about the audio coming up later tonight with the like child scene. It's frightening. Absolutely gave me chills. unlike Patrick Swayze in Ghost, which was funny. This sounds absolutely scary. My goodness.
Wait till you hear this, dude. Wait till you hear it.
But basically, I'll call him about a little bit follow-up. Because basically, like last week, I brought up this topic I wasn't familiar with, like here locally, of like the Stephenville UFO.
That's right, yeah.
And I watched the documentary, like, because I'm a skeptic like you, and this one documentary had involvement with MUFON, which do you know what that is? Of course, you know.
The Mutual UFO Network, yes.
All right, so basically, this little documentary, like the head of MUFON. Like, he went to, like, a local airport and looked at the radar. And basically, like, the radar shows, like, because the town said that because they saw a UFO and the lights were moving. And, like the military jets were following it. And luckily, the MUFON person was able to get the radar that shows that, because the military says that there were no fighter jets, but the radar shows that there were. And also showed two unidentified objects, which means like no in planes or in radar they have like the mechanisms so they can go back to radio control, and these two weren't unidentified. And so basically, they said because of this, like they did that found that discovery. When people ask for I think it was like fair use, public domain from like the radar people, they changed it because of that. So. It's interesting.
So after all of this evidence that you have now been presented, I mean, are you still as hardened a skeptic as you were before, or is this sort of begun to change your mind a little bit?
Oh, yeah. And, documentary said, like, MUFON, like, they can't confirm, deny it was, like alien, but they can confirm that whatever was in the air that night, that it wasn't of this earth. So that's pretty good quote. So,
now, it wasn't of this earth, or it was just unidentified?
Well, because back then talking about the speed it was going at. So, yeah, like he took, like people said this thing was like maybe like a quarter of a mile in diameter. And like the radar shows that like every couple, because the radar, when it turns, it's every 15 seconds, so the speed it was going at, it was like faster than the sonic booms that it was traveling. So basically, and because people said they couldn't hear no thrusters, like unlike the jet. So whatever this was, we can make it here on Earth. So talk about like the speed it was traveling at as well. So.
Well, it's certainly that would be a good indication that maybe not necessarily not from the Earth. I want to thank you very much for the call. But at least technology that we are unaware of here on this earth. Thank you very much for the call. It's funny to me that when I was a little kid, I loved reading about Bigfoot, and I loved reading about UFOs, and I loved reading about ghosts. And I didn't believe in ghosts one bit. I believed a little bit in Sasquatch, and I thought for sure that I'd see something. I'd see some sort of UFO at some point in my life, whether it was an unidentified flying object from another planet or just something I couldn't identify. Never in my lifetime did I imagine that I would see a ghost. I didn't see a ghost, but I saw evidence of a ghost before I saw evidence of a Bigfoot or a UFO. Astonishing to me. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is John from Chicago.
What's up, John?
Oh, not much, Brian. Been listening to it a long time, mostly on the wrestling end, but I finally got an After Dark related thing that happened to me a couple days ago.
Oh, good. What happened?
Well, like I said, I'm from Chicago, but I work in the northwest suburbs, so I have about an hour commute each way. And a couple days ago, I was driving back, and I like to try to avoid the highway, so I go to a bunch of the rural suburbs. And my phone was in the passenger seat listening to another podcast. And all of a sudden, the podcast was interrupted, and Siri said, there are two cemeteries nearby your current location. Would you like to go to either of these? And I screamed, no. And then she said, there is a crematorium 4 miles to the west. Would you like to go there instead? And I screamed, no, again. And she said, did I do something wrong? And I said, yes. And then she stopped talking.
Okay, hold on a second here. So first off, does Siri normally just out of the blue talk to you when you're driving?
It's never happened before in my life.
Never in your life? Because she certainly never talked to me when I was driving. So just never. Completely at random.
I don't know what. It just was completely random.
She offered you cemeteries and a crematorium.
Correct.
I'd probably throw that phone so far you'd never see it again.
Well, I'm talking on it right now. So I'm gonna do that,
hey, you're in trouble, dude. You keep an eye on that phone.
Yeah.
Hey, let me tell you something that's ironic, in fact. The guest that we have on the show tonight, Denise Roth, she's going to talk about a case that I was talking about at the beginning of the show, the story of Tina Resch. And if you go to the Culture Crossfire page, there's a photograph of Tina Resch, who supposedly had all this paranormal stuff happening to her. And there's a photograph of her phone flying across the room. That's right. And apparently she had a lot of paranormal experiences involving the phone.
Oh, well, you might be right. I might have to get rid of this phone then.
Yeah, you better listen to this tonight. I want to thank you so much for the call and a great story involving Siri. That's a new one. Siri has never talked to me. And if she started by offering me crematoriums and cemeteries, there would be a problem. Phone lines are open, everybody. 855-478-4478. If you want to give us a phone call here tonight, that is 855-478-4478. Toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Give us a call to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, this is Kirk from Canada.
What's happening, Kirk?
Nothing much tonight. Just want to tell you about an interesting little event that's happened around my neck of the woods here in the last week.
All right.
About a purported UFO crash.
A UFO crash?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
About 3 hours from where I live. Sorry, what was that?
Tell me more.
Okay, well, reportedly about a week ago, I got the website link here. It's humansarefree.com. Okay, here's what it says. A flying saucer, update, the UFO is apparently shaped like a steep pyramid without its apex, has allegedly crash-landed through the ice of Lake Winnipeg in Manitoba about 72 hours ago. Reportedly, that's what it says, but the military's up there reportedly doing exercises, so that might have something to do with it. But.
So the military is there doing exercises. And so that would be the conclusion. Now, how do we know that a UFO did not crash and the military has then been sent there? Or do we know this?
That's the thing. They have a lot of witnesses that swear it was that a large object crashed through the ice.
Well, what did the witnesses claim?
Okay. Let's see. Well, here's the UFO reportedly crashed on the site of the Jackhead Reserve in Manitoba, Canada. Apparently, the Canadian military have vehicles lined up on North Shore. They are threatening anybody who tries to take pics.
Oh, man. Well, apparently, this is a big-time story. I'm getting some information here from our illustrious webmaster, Keith Rowland. And if you Google Lake Winnipeg UFO crash, there is link after link after link after link after link. I should add the Manitoba, the Canadian military has denied that it was a UFO crash. You don't say. I would expect them to deny that. But apparently, I guess the public story is it is just a series of military exercises. So I guess we'll have to continue following the story because I guess witnesses have claimed otherwise. Witnesses have claimed it is not a military exercise. And I guess you could argue if you wanted to that something crashed and they sent the military who then claimed they were doing an exercise.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Can you head out there, Kirk? Would you be able to get out there by 1 o'clock a.m. Pacific tonight?
No.
Oh, man, I was going to send you as a reporter.
Where I live.
3 hours?
It's about 3 hours from where I live, and it's on a pretty isolated, it's on an Indian reservation that where it reportedly happened.
I see.
And it's kind of, and Lake Winnipeg is a very large lake. So it's not like I can just kind of, yeah.
Well, this is what I want you to do for me.
I think it's...
I should add, by the way, that there's an article here. The military has claimed training exercise confused for UFO. Kirk, what I want you to do is I want you to do all of the reporting that you can and then get back to me next week with what you discover. Talk to the people around the town. Whatever you do, don't get shot. But I would like you to go out there and see what you can see about this story.
Okay.
Well, thanks so much for the call.
Good, Brian.
I'm going to follow up on this too, Kirk. I really appreciate the call. Manitoba UFO. 3 hours. I don't expect Kirk necessarily to drive out there, but if he's got time for a day trip, that certainly would be pretty cool. Let's find out what really went down. But as noted, let's not get shot. That is my only request. Let's not get shot. It's time for the interview, everybody. This is a pre-taped interview that we did earlier today with Denise Roff. She is part of the Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research. We're going to be talking about ghosts and hauntings and telekinesis and so much more. It is a very fun interview. I really think you're going to enjoy it, and you will find out later on in the program how, if you happen to live in the area, you can not only go on a ghost hunt, but Denise Roff actually runs Ghost Hunting 101 classes, which means that if you're in the area, you can take a 4-hour class on ghost hunting, and she will teach you everything you need to know. It's 4 hours long, and believe it or not, the cost, it will shock you. I'm not even going to tell you the cost right now. It's so shocking that I'm going to make you listen to the interview to hear it. So we're going to be back in just a moment, everybody, with Denise Roff talking ghosts and so much more here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. We are back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here. After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Very happy today to be joined by Denise Roff. We're going to talk all things paranormal and maybe more here tonight on the program. And Denise, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing very well. We got a lot of stuff to talk to you about tonight. My producer, Andrew, has set this up, and he really wanted you to talk tonight about a very, it's fascinating, it's horrifying, the story of Tina Resch. And he wrote an article about this on culturecrossfire.com, which you can check out if you head up to Culture Crossfire and type in Tina Resch, R-E-S-C-H. We're going to talk about that tonight on the show and a lot of other things. And first off, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, Denise.
Well, let's see. I am a paranormal investigator and author. I've been investigating claims of paranormal events for the last 16 years. I'm not sure what else to tell you. I'm married. We have one daughter who is also married, and we have two beautiful grandchildren and one on the way.
So 16 years you have been doing this. What was it that first got you involved in paranormal research? Did you have an incident? Is it something you've always been interested in? And 16 years ago, you had the opportunity to pursue it? Or how did this come about?
Well, my father was always interested in the paranormal. Growing up, he would bring home everything, books and newspaper articles, and share with me and my siblings all about the things that he found. But I lost my mother in 1998. And on the night of her funeral, my brother, my sister, and I all saw her at the same time. And from that point, I thought, well, gee, there must be people who are experiencing things that they can't explain, and I really would like to interview some other people and try and look into this and see why this phenomena occurs. So that's what started me on the road to investigating paranormal claims.
So when you say that you all saw her, I mean, was it like she'd never left? Was it an apparition? What did you see?
My sister owned a bed and breakfast, and My mother lived in a little house behind the B&B, and my sister's home was about three doors down. And the night of her funeral, my sister received a call from the police department, and they said, all the lights are on, all the doors are open up at the B&B. You know, you guys need to go up there and close it up so it doesn't get vandalized. So we walked up, and my brother-in-law and husband went in the front door, and myself and my sister and my sister-in-law went to the back because we thought if somebody was in the house that they would run out the back door. As we were standing there, we saw my mother cross the little path that she used to cross from her house into the B&B. She walked up the path and up the back steps. My brother, who had gone into the front door, went to the kitchen area to the back door and saw her come into the back door of the B&B. But we all saw her at the same time.
So you decided that I've got to find out if there are other people that have experiences or I guess just have these kind of see these things that you saw. Who did you first contact to get involved in this?
Well, I didn't really first contact anyone. I just, my husband and I had a trip to California to see my father, and we ended up at the Winchester Mystery House, and I just took a little digital voice recorder with me, and of course a camera, and we took a tour at the Mystery House. And of course on the tour they were talking about the ghosts that haunt the Winchester Mystery House. So we kind of hung back in the back of the tour hoping to get some audio recordings just to see what might happen. Thankfully, another tour guide saw us kind of hanging back and said, would you guys like to come over here because there's activity over here? And we ended up going with him through some parts of the Winchester Mystery House. Later on, when we played the recording, we had a couple EVPs. So from that point, I just kind of started doing my own investigations, and then I found people who were also interested in doing their own, and we started hanging out together and doing investigations. But I will say that I approach it very skeptically. I try to find a natural reason or logical reason for things that happen. And it's not always a paranormal event, of course.
You know, it's funny. I was doing an investigation around here. I'm very much a skeptic. But there was a building nearby that a lot of my friends claimed was haunted. And so I got a bunch of equipment. I have a couple of friends who are ghost hunters, and they helped me out with some sort of equipment that might help and everything like that. And I went to do an investigation, and we found some weird things. We got some EMF readings. We got a really, really high reading by a wooden door, which later just was gone. It was a reading of around 40. And it was there for quite a while, wooden door. And then about 20 minutes later, it was gone, and just absolutely no explanation for this. And we also got a couple of EVPs. EVPs, you hear good ones and you hear bad ones. And
right.
It's kind of hard to tell if you've really heard something or what it was. These weren't the best EVPs ever. You've got one that I'm going to play here. This is from the SIPR investigations.com, I guess is how.
Yes. Yeah,
the Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research. If you want to go up there and check that out, Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research. And you've got an EVP on here that I'm going to play for everybody. When I heard this one, It blew my mind. This is either, there's either a child on this investigation or this is a spirit. There's no other explanation. It's not something right. where when you hear it, maybe you heard something and maybe you didn't. I mean, this is clear as day. So let me play that right here for everybody, and then I want you to talk about it. Here we go. That is a child saying la-di-da-di-da. I'll play it one more time. I've got this cranked up. It's kind of quiet, but we'll try it one more time. That is amazing. Tell us the story behind that EVP.
It is amazing. We were in a historic theater in Fairburn, Georgia. The Southside Theater Guild is the name of the theater. But the staff had been complaining that they were seeing figures, apparitions in the theater after shows and late at night. So we were there. There were no children present at all. The staff had mentioned that they were seeing an apparition of a little girl. So we got on the stage in a circle. We had a ball that was in the middle of the circle, and we were just saying, you know, feel free to come over and move this ball. At the end of the night, we were going back through the audio, and the interesting thing to me is that there were four digital voice recorders that were around the circle when this EVP was captured, but only two of the recorders actually picked up the EVP. And you can hear a little girl just singing her heart out. But we didn't hear anything at the time, and there were no children. It was very late. It's about 1:35 in the morning. So that was a very interesting Class A EVP.
So once again, you had four recorders set up, and yeah. you only heard this on two of them.
On two of them, yep.
It's even more strange. So a Class A EVP is an EVP where, I mean, it's unmistakable what it is that everybody has heard.
Right.
And then a Class B, how many classes are there?
Well, there's Class A, Class B, Class C. And then, I mean, I've heard people talk about Class D EVPs. And then there's Class A reverse, Class B reverse, you know, there's all kinds of different interpretations, but we basically go with the five, and that's A, B, C, D, and R for the reverse. We do not present Class D EVPs. They're so faint and barely audible, so we don't present those as evidence. And even Class C EVPs, we try not to present as evidence because they too are very faint usually.
So Class C and Class D is essentially, it could be anything, but a class
right.
Class A is clear as day. And a class, how do you describe a Class B?
A Class B EVP, I'm sorry, EVP is the way that we talk about it within our group. It's more or less a Class A EVP, except that we can't agree exactly on what is being said.
Okay.
You know, somebody might hear one thing and somebody else might disagree with what they've heard.
Okay. So those are the ones that are actually probably most common, because if you
right.
go look for EVPs, I mean, there's plenty of them, and usually somebody has to tell you what it is that they think that they're hearing. And you either hear it or you don't. So that's a Class B. Let me play this one more time just in case anybody didn't hear it or you want to be freaked out again. This is a Class A, if ever there was one. So where, do you have the audio of the other one as well?
Do I have the audio of the other, from the other recorder?
Yeah, I've got, maybe
yeah.
I didn't see it on the site. Is that one on the site as well or no?
No, it's not.
Okay.
No, it's not. They both sounded exactly the same.
Okay, so that's what I figured.
Yeah.
Man, that one is just completely blows my mind. Is that the best EVP that you've got, or do you have better ones?
It is the best EVP we've ever gotten.
Yeah. You would be hard-pressed to have a better one than that.
Right.
What kind of, you've got four here that I've seen on the main page of the Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research. How many do you normally put up at any given time? How many do you have?
How many do we have? Boy.
Hundreds?
I wouldn't say hundreds, no. Maybe 200, maybe. But again, they're not all Class A EVPs. We have very few Class A EVPs. And we don't always get EVPs with every investigation. So I'd say we have about 200.
On the investigation that we did, we had some questionable EVPs. I would say they were Class B, maybe Class C. Certainly not Class A. But we did get the EMF readings, and we didn't get a photo of an orb, and I can get your thoughts on orbs here in a moment. We were about to take a photo of the door where we were getting the high EVP reading, and we were using an iPhone just to take a photo of the door, and the iPhone has a flash on it, and so as the flash was illuminating the room, we saw an orb through the lens, but then when it took the photo, there was no orb. So we saw it moving through the camera, but we didn't actually get a photograph of it. What are your thoughts in general? I think that most people would say a lot of orbs are dust specks and that sort of thing.
Right.
What are your thoughts on orbs? Are there real mysterious orbs, or is this all just dust, in your opinion?
Well, okay. I do not subscribe to orb theory per se. I think there are too many variables. It could be dust or humidity or insects or breath or smoke or just reflection of things within the camera itself. So there are just too many variables. We don't present them as evidence. Having said that, we were on a case in North Georgia and have on video just the strangest group of orbs that are flying towards and look like they went right into her chest of the homeowner. And I still can't say 100% that that was something spiritual or something other than dust or humidity or whatever, but it certainly made me question whether or not it was possible. So I do think that it's possible, but it would be incredibly rare, and we don't present them as evidence.
We had a very high EMF reading by a door, and we got the reading with the power in the building on, and we got the reading with the power in the building off. And then later, maybe 30 minutes later, we got a reading of absolute zero. I mean, not even 0.1 or anything, just absolute zero, with the power on and with the power off. It was very, very strange. I don't really have an explanation for it. What kind of things can, I mean, In your experience with EMF readings, I mean, what are some natural explanations for this? Is this a normal occurrence, or was this strange?
It sounds strange to me, and the only reason that I say that is because you had a reading and then you didn't have a reading. The only thing that I can think of that would cause that, I mean, if you had a reading when the power was off, and then while the power was still off, you didn't have a reading. Obviously, there's something going on. But there are a lot of natural occurrences that can set off EMF meters. Most of them are man-made, though. Most man-made things cause meters to go off during investigations. We had another interesting case just a few weeks ago where we one of our members had an EMF meter in his hand. Doug was his name. But Doug was also standing in a wooden doorway, and everything was off. And we had done baseline readings so that we knew where the hot spots were before the investigation. And Doug's EMF meter started to go crazy. Another one of our members, Donna, started asking questions. And she would ask whatever it was to back away from the EMF meter. And it would slowly stop reacting. And she would ask whatever to come back close to it, and it would pick up activity again, and the meter would start going off again. We've seen that happen to the degree that it did. And one time she asked it to back away, and it did, and the meter stopped reacting, and she said, thank you, and then the meter went beep, beep, as if to say, you're welcome. You know, so it was a very strange occurrence there, a very interesting investigation.
Yeah, we didn't ask any questions. We were just mostly baffled. I've used the EMF device in various places just to see what kind of readings things give off. I've got a lot of equipment here in this studio, and I put it in front of the microwave, for example. And the only thing that I have ever found that registered a higher reading than this wooden door was like a really old heater. I don't even know how the heater runs, but I mean, I put this thing next to the heater, and it the EMF thing went all the way up to 180. And so from that point, it was like, I need to never go near this heater again for my own safety. But even in front of like the microwave, and I got a couple of transformers here, power sources, I mean, nothing got all the way up to a 40 except for this door. Right. It was so weird.
That is weird. That is what you need to go back and do it again.
Oh, I will.
See if it does it again.
And now I know to ask questions this time.
Yeah.
Now, when you have your various, I mean, it's been, I forget how many years you said, 17 years, I believe, investigated, I'm sure, many different places. Give us a list of some of the best hits you've got. Where are some of the most haunted places? And granted, you are a skeptic, so hopefully this would have to be pretty good. Some of the best haunts, so to speak, that you have investigated.
Okay. The Fox Theater in Atlanta. The Edgar Allan Poe House up in Baltimore was interesting. Lots of private residences have been interesting, and the Queen Mary I had a very interesting experience on the Queen Mary. I saw an apparition myself.
Oh, really?
There. Yeah.
Whole body, yeah. Half body, what did you see?
Everything but legs.
It's just like Ghostbusters in that library, everything but legs.
Yeah, it was, I was just walking in a very dark place in the bowels of the ship. I don't know if you know you can do that, but they don't mind if you go into the engine compartment and places like that in the ship. So I was down just walking around and saw this glowing apparition of a little girl. And at first I thought, what is a little girl doing down here, you know? And she disappeared quickly. It was just a second, and she was gone.
Now, the Edgar Allan Poe residence, I mean, if anybody would have a haunted residence, you would think that he would be way up there.
Right.
I guess going back to the apparition, I mean, is that the best thing that you've ever seen as a ghost hunter? Besides your mother, obviously.
I have seen a teddy bear lift up off a bed and fly across the room and hit the opposite wall.
So levitation.
Yes.
Man, how are you still a skeptic after seeing all of this stuff?
Well, I mean, okay. It's a good question. I don't know. I'm still on the, you know, there has to be a natural explanation for these
That's exactly
things,
where I am.
You know?
Yeah. Now, when you get a call from somebody who says, my residence is haunted, all right, you go and you do your investigation. Maybe you get something and maybe you don't. In what percentage of cases, when somebody calls the Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research, in what percentage would you say we go and, you know what, I don't know what it is, but something weird is happening in this person's residence? Is it about 50%, more or less?
Oh, boy. It's a hard question for me to answer right this minute. I actually keep statistics on this. I actually have all the data and EVPs and how many EVPs to how many residences and how many to historic locations and all of that. I keep statistical information on all of it. I would say probably maybe 55-60%.
Wow. What do you conclude when somebody calls and they say, my house is haunted, and you go and investigate and there's just nothing? Do you conclude that, well, we're here, so they're not? Or do you conclude that this person probably just has a child with an active imagination that moves things? Is there a conclusion that you draw, or is just, who knows?
Well, okay, I'll give you an example. We were called out for an investigation. The homeowners were saying at night that there was a ghost child that was breaking into their house and creating havoc, knocking things over in their bathroom. And every morning they would wake up and find their bathroom completely trashed. And they just knew that it was a ghost child because, after all, it left little handprints everywhere. So we went out to investigate, and then we asked them, you know, they cleaned up their bathroom. So we asked them where they saw the handprints. And the homeowner said, well, come outside and I'll show you. They're all up the side of the house to our bathroom, and they're still there. I didn't wash them off. So we said, okay. So we went outside and around to where their bathroom was. And sure enough, there's all these little raccoon handprints going up the side of the building. And they had a broken pane in their bathroom. And this raccoon was getting into their house at night and tearing things up. We've also found, like, squirrels.
Now, can you confirm that this was not a ghost raccoon?
I'm pretty sure by the droppings it was not a ghost raccoon.
I guess that's probably good evidence there.
Yeah. So
you found squirrels and other animals that have caused problems?
Right. I keep teasing my friends, saying I need to write a book about animals that pretend to be ghosts, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously the majority of the places that you investigate, and I guess this would be a question for any ghost hunter now that I think about it. I mean, I went down to the building near my house because I heard it was haunted, and people call you, and obviously some of the places that you go to investigate have a reputation of being haunted, which sort of begs the question, if I just went over to my neighbor's house and I said, hey, have you ever had any weird things happening here? And they said, nah, new house, never had anything, nothing. And then I went in and investigated. Who knows what I'd find? I guess my question to you is, what's going on in houses that nobody ever reports on? Do you believe, have you ever, just for whatever reason, investigated a house where there have been no reports? I don't know why you would, but has that ever happened?
We have, actually. Historic properties that I love history, and I love historic properties, so I've actually called and begged to come out and investigate. And they have said, you know, there's nothing here. There's no ghosts here. And some of the properties, there have been no EVPs, no evidence at all. And some of the properties, there has been. So I don't know, though. It's a really good question as to why some people pick up on activity and some don't.
I guess that's kind of my question. Like, is every house, is there a spirit in every house if these things exist, or do they congregate in certain areas? I mean, obviously that's a theory. If there's been a tragedy, right. If there's been something terrible, they will remain there. But I don't know. I just thought about that. I mean, though the houses where there are no reports are least likely to be investigated, so who knows what's in there?
Right. Yep. But I also think that people are haunted more than places are haunted.
Well, that brings us to this story that we need to talk about here today, the story of Tina Resch. I read the article by my producer, Andrew Lutsky, who he writes for Culture Crossfire, and there's a very, very long article here if you want to go up, including a very interesting photograph of Tina Resch sitting on a couch, and it appears that a telephone is floating. It has flown past her, and she is in a state of shock. I guess let's start at the beginning. Tell us a story. We'll start with the capsule version of Tina Resch.
Okay. Well, Tina Resch was abandoned as a baby. She was 10 months old or so, and was placed in foster care with John and Joan Resch. They adopted her when she was 2.5, and when Tina was 14 or so, these things started to happen. Objects would just fly anytime she was near them. Objects would just take off and fly. The homeowners ended up getting in touch with the Columbus Dispatch, which is where they were. They were in Columbus, Ohio. And the dispatch ran a story about Tina and the phenomena. The man who took the famous photo is Fred Shannon. Tina went on to be tested with Dr. Roll, with his organization, and I'm giving you a synopsis, so I'm
sure.
Kind of running over everything.
Yeah, we'll go into details in a moment.
Okay, but she was tested in a laboratory and ended up going back to Columbus, had a very difficult time. She had a very bad relationship with her parents. She ended up moving out when she was 16 and getting married. That marriage ended in divorce. She met someone else and remarried, divorced him, met someone else, became pregnant, and Dr. Roll convinced her to move down to Georgia to Carrollton. So she moved to Georgia with her daughter, and then later on was doing some work for a lady that she knew through Dr. Roll. And while she was at the lady's house, got a phone call from her boyfriend who was babysitting her daughter, and he said the child was unresponsive and they needed to go to the hospital. The little girl was 3 years old, and she died at the hospital from brain trauma, brain bleeds. Tina was arrested at the hospital, along with her boyfriend. David Heron was his name. And David did not sign a plea bargain. He went to trial. He was found guilty of child cruelty, and served some time and was paroled just a couple years ago. Tina, under the bad advice of her public defender, signed a plea bargain admitting to murder of her daughter, and she wasn't even home at the time. So Tina is still in prison serving a sentence, life plus 20 years for murder and cruelty to children.
Is she up for parole this year?
She is up for parole this year in April.
Okay. Yep. Thought I'd read that.
Yep.
So, a lot of questions here. First off, the photograph, the photographer who took the famous photo here that is in this article at culturecrossfire.com, he saw the phone. What did he see just prior to taking this photo? Why did he take this photo when he did?
Well, he had been in the house for a little while and had seen things flying, but he wasn't ever able, as soon as he would lift his camera to take a picture, the activity would cease. So he started to be sneaky, and he kind of laid the camera down, but kept his finger on the shutter and kept Tina in focus. And he would look away. He would pretend to look away, but out of his peripheral vision, he would see objects flying, snap photos. So that's how this picture was taken, was kind of Fred Shannon doing it on the fly, so to speak, by seeing the object move from his peripheral vision. He had his finger on the shutter and he took the picture.
So he saw this when it began. He saw it when it was taking place. Okay. So she was then, I mean, later she was investigated, maybe that's paranormal investigators in a controlled environment attempted to have these things be replicated. And
right.
Whenever that was the case, nothing ever happened.
That's correct.
That's very interesting. What would you say was what is the conclusion in terms of her entire case, the paranormal aspect of it? I mean, is it generally believed that very, very strange things were happening? Is it as a result of everything that happened and her ending up in prison? Is there a feeling that she must have been responsible for this, playing some sort of game? What is the conclusion?
The conclusion that Dr. Roll came to was recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis. In other words, she was moving everything with her mind. When she was angry, the activity would pick up. When they were able to calm her down or keep her calm, things wouldn't move. So Dr. Roll believed that it was recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis.
Stemming probably from a very difficult childhood.
Yes, a very, very difficult childhood. Yes.
Do you know if when she went to prison, there have ever been reports? I mean, do we know anything about what's going on in prison? I mean, obviously this is a tough situation, so has everything continued in prison?
I can tell you that I was in touch with Mr. Richard Allen, who was her attorney at the time. Mr. Allen died of a heart attack in 2009. But prior to that, I had been in contact with him about Tina, and he told me of an incident that happened while he was visiting her in the prison. He said that there was a disconnected phone that was not being used. It was an old phone, and it was laying on the floor where he was meeting with Tina and her counselor. And the phone would ring incessantly to the point that he got up and picked it up to answer it, thinking, you know, it must be hooked up in some way he couldn't see. And, of course, when he picked it up to answer it, there was nothing. It was dead. And Tina began to giggle. So things like that were still happening.
She began to giggle.
Yeah, she giggled because it kept happening, and she kept saying that she wasn't doing it, you know, that she wasn't in control of it and didn't understand it, but it kept happening. The phone just kept ringing. He finally took it off the hook and, you know, pushed it further away, and it didn't happen anymore, so I don't know.
So this is now two incidents that occurred involving a phone.
Right, right. Well, there's been several reports of phones doing things in her presence.
Why phones? Did anyone ever come to any conclusions?
I don't know. Not a firm conclusion, not that I know of, no.
So many, many people outside of the controlled environment witnessed all of this, but within the controlled environment, it never happened. And we've got one photograph here. Was anybody else ever able to get any sort of photos or videos? I mean, this was 84, so I guess you'd have had to have a film camera, so that's unlikely. But was anyone ever able to get any other evidence to what was going on?
Fred Shannon actually had many photographs of things happening within the home. Aside from Fred, I don't think so. Not that I've ever heard of, anyway.
This story, how did you get involved in investigating this particular story? What was your tie-in?
Well, I heard about it. In 1984, I was living in San Francisco, and I was also a teenager. And so when I heard about it, I was interested. But later, when I started doing the investigations, I think I saw another article that popped up about her. And I thought, I wonder what's going on, you know, and I read about the murder charges and the fact that she was in prison. And I also read some of the court testimony, and it bothered me that she was in prison for life plus 20 years when she wasn't even home. So I contacted Dr. Roll, and I had spoken with him previously. He was at a convention that I attended. But I contacted Dr. Roll, talked to him about the case a little bit. Then I contacted Richard Allen, her attorney at the time, and my husband is from Ohio, so when we went up for Thanksgiving, I ran away from my in-laws and went to see Millie Shannon, Fred's widow. And I'm teasing about my in-laws. They're wonderful people.
Of course.
Millie was very kind, invited me in and allowed me to talk to her about Fred's photograph. And the interesting thing that she said was that night after he came home that day from taking the photos at the Rush residence, he was visibly shaken by what he had witnessed. But there were also some events that happened in their home that night and for a few days in their home. So it was very intriguing to them and a little fearful for them at the same time.
So he took the photo, he came home, and then I guess the theory would be that whatever he took the photograph of followed him home, but was only there for a few days.
Right. Well, that happens with investigations, certain investigations that I go on. I'll come home and have activity for a few days, and it'll dissipate and go away. Again, I'm very skeptical, so I can't say, oh, I brought a spirit home. I don't know what's happening there, but I believe it because I've had it happen.
Do you have to... Oh, man, that opens a can of worms there. So you come home, and it appears, as a skeptic, however, that something... Things are just weird for a couple of days.
Right.
Now, obviously, we could get into stories of people who claim that their houses are so haunted that an exorcism is required. Never had anything happen where it's like, huh, this has been here a little bit too long. This is a little bit too disruptive. It's always just been a few days and it's gone?
Yeah. Yeah, it just lasts a few days and it's gone.
What do you think it is that causes some spirits, or whatever you would want to call it, to cause trouble in a place for people for an extended period of time?
I'm not sure it's the spirit. I think it's the people. And I know that probably sounds very strange, but I think that some people are deeply affected by these events, and at the same time, they're very curious about them. And if there is spirits or negative energy or demons or whatever you want to call it, and you are curious and you're, you know, putting that energy out there, then I would think that they kind of see that as a lighthouse in a way. They're drawn to it. So I don't know, but I think it's more about the people than it is about the house or the location when that happens.
So just because certain people, I mean, is it, does it require a, I hate to say a negative energy, but I mean, does it require a person who has that sort of energy about them, or is it just some people, happy or sad, angry or content, are more likely to be followed around?
Yeah, I don't think that it's strictly negative, you know, energies or negative people. But certainly I have seen more activity with people that are chronically negative than I have with people who are chronically happy. If that makes any sense.
Now, you have noted that you have seen levitation, you have seen things fly across the room, you saw apparitions, you've seen at least a couple of them, your mom and the other legless apparition, and still a skeptic. So I guess the question to you is, what do you need to believe that this is something?
That's a loaded question. I don't know. I mean, when I've seen apparitions, when I saw the teddy bear levitate and fly across the room, I haven't had other equipment go off at the same time. So, of course, I questioned myself, you know, did I really just see that? Did the teddy bear fall? Are my eyes playing tricks on me in this very dark place?
Sure.
You know, so until somebody can find the absolute reason for apparitions and levitation, things moving like that, I'll remain a skeptic because I just don't know. I don't know what the mind is capable of, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we learn new things about the brain all the time, but I guess what kind of research? I know, like, during the 60s and the 70s, I mean, there was a lot of research being done into telekinesis. Is there such a thing as ESP? I don't know so much about today, though. I mean, what kind of work is being done on this? Is anybody really studying it? I know there's some interesting things like the eggs. I think it's at Stanford. I'm not entirely sure. But what kind of investigations are going on today into this sort of thing?
I think that there are actually quite a few. I think a few groups have run experiments, you know, on their own, but I also know there are a couple universities, I believe, that are still have groups that are engaged in that kind of research. And then there's places like the Rand Institute that, you know, is still engaged in that kind of research. So I think it's still going on. I just don't think it's quite as, I mean, if you tell people, I'm running this ESP experiment, you know, want to come over and try it, most people are going to go, oh, no thanks, you know. So I just think it's not as fashionable, I guess, as it was in the 60s and 70s.
The incident that you had with the teddy bear, you've mentioned before that I think sometimes it's the people and not the house. Was it you?
No, I think it was the homeowner. She was... Sometimes we are called out to a case, and once we get there, we find that the homeowner has some serious issues. This particular homeowner was trying to trick us, and we knew that. We knew that she was, we had caught her on camera. She didn't realize that our cameras were had night vision. And we had caught her on camera scratching herself and then saying, oops, you know, somebody scratched me. And then we roll the video back and see that she scratched herself. She went into the bathroom and came out and a few seconds later said, somebody just turned on the water in the bathroom. It just came on all by itself. Well, no, she was just in there. So we were kind of... cautious about her, and I was in her daughter's bedroom alone, and I saw the teddy bear lift up and fly across the room, and my first thought was, this is some kind of trickery. She's tried, you know, she's tied some kind of string or something to this teddy bear. But I went and looked at the teddy bear, and there was nothing. I checked out the bed. There was nothing that would make a teddy bear fly across the room. But she was most definitely, I don't know, very, very much wanted to be haunted. And then we did an EVP session, and we were sitting quietly in the dark, and there was like a little tap or something on the wall, just a natural house settling kind of noise. And she yelled out, she said, Bill, is that you, Bill? I went to prison because of you. And then we're like, okay, did she murder Bill? You know, is she hoping that Bill is haunting her house? We don't know. So when I say that I think it was the homeowner, I think that she had so much energy going to want to prove to us so badly that her house was haunted that I think it's totally possible that her energy moves that teddy bear, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Before we go, I want to make sure we talk about, for those of you that are listening to this, and maybe you are in the area, on your website here for the Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research, which is SIPRinvestigations.com, on the main menu up at the top, classes and more. Ghost hunting classes here. Tell us about these classes.
They're a lot of fun. We do offer Ghost Hunting 101 classes. Typically, it's to benefit a historic location. We ask for donations, and it's a four-hour class, but we put in some breaks in there and usually have some refreshments of some kind in between. But they're just a lot of fun, and right now we have another one coming up in April that we've had a waiting list at this location every time we go, and it's the Hall County Library in Gainesville, Georgia. But they're just a lot of fun, and we get to share what we do and some of our evidence and information and meet new people, and it's a lot of fun.
I'm looking right here, and it says, please contact us for information on when the next class will be held. There is usually a nominal registration fee, $3 to $5?
Yeah.
At that price, I would practically fly out there to spend my $3 to $5 to join this class.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun, and I'm not in this for the money. There's no money in ghost hunting or investigating claims of the paranormal. The only way that I make money is by writing books. So it's just a really fun thing. It's a lot of fun for us. It's a lot of fun for the people that come out. And we enjoy it.
So you go for 4 hours and you're doing this class in a specific area. And do you often, I mean, how often do you get lucky, so to speak?
It depends on the location, whether or not we investigate after the glass. Usually we do, but not always. The last investigation at the library, I think it was something ridiculous. I think we walked away with like 9 EVPs.
Wow.
But we've also done classes there and then an investigation and had absolutely nothing. So it's interesting. It causes you to wonder whether it's the people or the location, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a lot of fun.
Ghosts and Legends of Charleston is up at Amazon.com. And you mentioned books. So before we wrap it up here today, I want to give you an opportunity to plug everything. The Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research, which we've been talking about all day today. We've talked about the classes. Let's talk about the books and anything else we haven't mentioned yet.
Okay. Well, Ghosts and Legends of Charleston is my first book. The second one is called Haunted South Carolina. And I'm not sure when it'll be out, hopefully in the next year or so. And then I'm doing something a little bit different. I'm writing a nonfiction book about a family that had just really crazy, interesting stories with this one family. So those are the books I'm working on.
Should add that if you go to Amazon for Ghosts and Legends of Charleston here by Denise Roff, 4 reviews, 5 stars. I'm sorry. Every single review is 5 stars. So
yay.
That's right. Head up there and check that book out. And once again, the website that you can check out, particularly if you're in the area and you want to go to the ghost hunting classes, it is the Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research, SIPRinvestigations.com is the website. And by the way, you can go up there if you missed the EVP that we played earlier on in this interview here, which, what the heck, let's play it one more time. There's this one and more on the website. Here we go. That's right, a child singing as it appears to be skipping around. That is up at the website as well. And Denise, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and hopefully down the road we can get you back on again, maybe talk about one of your books.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And of course, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back in just a moment with more After Dark Radio here on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. And we are back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here. After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network. That was Denise Roff talking there was a lot of stuff she was talking about. The Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research is the website if you want to head up there and check that out. And you can hear all of those EVPs and more on that website. So make sure you head up there. It is SIPRinvestigations.com. SIPR for the Southeastern Institute of Paranormal Research. SIPRinvestigations.com. And I really, honest to God, can't think of anything more fun than going on a ghost hunt, a ghost hunting 101 class with Denise, which is noted $3 to $5 is the fee, depending on the location. So head up there and check that out. There's a link to the Facebook page as well. And have a good time. Open line phones are back in action. 855-478-4478 is the phone number. Once again, that is 855-478-4478. If you want to give us a call today, you are welcome to do so. Any subject under the sun, you can talk about the interview. Everybody was calling in tonight about everything. So trust me, anything that is on your mind, we will discuss on tonight's program. Should note, by the way, if you have not been up to Twitter lately, perhaps you did not see the tweet from the Dark Matter Radio Network. At DM Radio Net is the Twitter handle, by the way, at DM Radio Net. I am at Brian Alvarez if you want to tweet me. Keith tweeted, Brian and Keith will be doing an after show after dark. That means tonight at 1 o'clock a.m. Pacific, We will be doing a show only for live listeners. So unfortunately, if you are listening to this on a replay, I'm afraid you missed out. But if you're listening to this live on Friday night, you can hear the after show immediately after this program goes off the air. We're going to be talking the latest information on the return of Art Bell, talking about my new shows apparently as well. But for those of you that have been wondering what is going on with Art Bell, is he coming back? What's up with the music? What's going on? Are there negotiations? Is he coming back in July? What the heck is happening? Well, after the show tonight, tune in and Keith is going to give you all of the information that he is available, that he is allowed to give, I guess, at least at this point. So that is coming up immediately after this program tonight, only for those of you listening here live. Got a lot of tweets here during the show. Kirk unfortunately noted that getting to the Jackhead Reserve where the UFO apparently crashed, if you listen to the call earlier in the show, may be difficult. It is in Death Tour territory. For those of you that are not wrestling fans, there is an area of northern Canada where wrestling promoters used to take the workers, take the boys, on death tours. You would go through very treacherous conditions, very, very icy roads and buses to the smallest towns in northern Canada to do your wrestling loop. The Tony Condello Death Tours. And apparently that is where this UFO crashed. Maybe it was going to a show. I don't know. But apparently Kirk is probably not going to be able to get up there to check that out. Also, John here says, I will not be able to sleep for a while after hearing that EVP. The EVP of the dancing, skipping, singing child, which is also up there at that website if you would like to check it out. Once again, the phone number's here tonight, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, 855-478-4478 is the phone number. Open lines, anything that is on your mind, you're welcome to call us about. Also, the two other lines, west of the Rockies, 425-488-0525. East of the Rockies, we are up at 425-482-1686. Drop me an email, Brian@AfterDarkRadioShow.com. You can tweet me at Brian Alvarez. And, of course, the Facebook page, as run by Andrew, is Facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. If you'd like to join the party tonight, you're welcome to do so. Did get a couple of emails during the interview. Let's go over a couple of those here. This person here has actually sent me a YouTube video, which I will check out later, of the Hampton Court Ghost CCTV. I guess it is. He says here, thought you might be interested in this. It is an old story, but very unsettling. So maybe if you want to check that out after the show, go to YouTube and type in Hampton Court Ghost CCTV, and I will check that out there after the break. I have also got this from Ryan. And Ryan, if you're listening right now, you've attached a photo, and unfortunately, the photo is way, way too small, and for whatever reason, I am unable to blow it up any bigger. So if you get a chance, please send me a larger copy of this photo. He says, I love the show. I work in a very old music venue in Nashville, Tennessee. Whenever I have to be there in the early mornings, I like to get there a few minutes before everybody and just sit in the auditorium. The place has a lot of history, and there in the dark, you can certainly feel an energy and a presence around. The cleaning crew, who cleans up after the show at night, tells stories that they hear talking and music and all kinds of noises late at night on Tuesday morning while sitting alone in the dark auditorium. I felt a presence pretty close to in front of me. I got a strong desire to take a photo. I took one regular photo, and then I took this photo with the flash on. What do I see? About halfway down the center aisle, I see what I think looks like the outline of somebody standing with a hand out, perhaps an usher. At the end of the hand, I see a silhouette of a possible person sitting in the seats, and perhaps the outline of a smaller person beside them. Maybe I'm crazy, but I don't think so. take a look and let me know what you think. Ryan, please send me that photo again, because as noted, it's too small here on my computer and I am not able to blow it up. So send a larger version of that and I'll check it out and see if I do in fact see a hand. Also got this here from Ryan. This here is from Stay Wild magazine, the Slurpee Waves of Nantucket. Have you ever seen waves get so cold that they turn into a Slurpee? We have not. So when surfer photographer Stay Wild contributor Jonathan Nimerfro showed us these sweet spots he captured in Nantucket, we had to share. When we asked Jonathan what the, I can't say the word, this is a PG show, what this was all about, he said, quote, "Just been super cold here. The harbor to the mainland is frozen solid. No boats running. The day after I took these, it actually froze up the shoreline for 200 yards out. Solid ice. I was totally tripping when I pulled up to the beach and I saw this." You can check it out. Apparently, the waves have turned into a Slurpee. The Slurpee Waves of Nantucket. If you want to check that out, it's in Stay Wild magazine. If you go to staywildmagazine.com, or I'm sure if you'd like to, you could Google the Slurpee Waves of Nantucket. Head up there and check that out. My email address, of course, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. Give me a email there if you would like to, and let me know what you have on your mind. I also got an email from the great Power Udi, for those of you that are wrestling fans. He says here, and this is ironic because he said this before the Denise Roth interview. He says, "This is your friend John Eek Udi, a.k.a. the great Power Udi of Nigeria. I am listening to your show for the first time tonight while I eat breakfast in Lagos, Nigeria. I am very skeptical about these topics, but I do think there may be a ghost in the garage of my home. Or perhaps it is a rodent. I don't know. At least it has not damaged my Bentley." That is from the great Power Udi, who apparently has got a number of sports cars, I have heard. And how ironic that he's got some sort of animal in his garage. And Denise Roth was talking about how sometimes when she gets reports about these strange incidents at homes, sometimes it is raccoons or other animals. So, great Power Udi, I hope you heard the interview, and I hope that helps you solve whatever problems you're having there in your garage. Want to point out, by the way, a couple of websites before we jump into some news here. Obviously, if you are listening to this on the Dark Matter Radio Network, you should be heading at the beginning of every day to artbell.com. There is a lot of news that is posted regularly on artbell.com. We're going to go through some of those stories here today. You can follow us up there at artbell.com, which of course will also give you a link to the Dark Matter Radio Network, where you can listen to this show live on Friday nights, as well as all of the other great programming that we have on the After Dark Radio Network as well. And also the Facebook page. Facebook page, of course, is facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow. Please, if you get a chance, go up there and like the page. We are now pushing 2,700 likes on the Facebook page. So if you're a fan of this program, you can head up and favorite us, friend us, here on the Facebook page, and you'll get all sorts of news articles. Usually about 3 per day are posted by Andrew, so your feed is not bombarded. But I know he's got a lot of articles, approximately 31 scheduled to be released here over the next several weeks. So head up there and subscribe. What do you call it when you're on that Facebook thing right there? When you, I know you can friend a guy, but on a page, I think you follow it, I think is how it goes. But go up there and follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well. Twitter, I think we're approaching 20,000 followers. So if you want to be lucky number 20,000, well, pretty soon you may be able to get it. It looks like I'm at 19.8, 19792. So head up there and follow me on Twitter as well. All right, a little bit of news here to get into. A lot of this from the artbell.com website. This year, I actually wanted to, maybe when we do the after show tonight, we can talk to Keith Rowland about this one, because I believe he went to this Phoenix UFO conference. This up here from Joint Recon Study Group. It says here, this is from Steve Hammonds. The audience at the 24th Annual International UFO Conference Convention and Film Festival last week near Scottsdale, Arizona, heard some fascinating presentations that were at times both hopeful and frightening. From ancient accounts and Native American lore to ongoing scientific developments, speakers explored many aspects of research about UFOs. Sensitive U.S. military bases like Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in southwestern Ohio and Area 51 in southern Nevada have played key roles associated with this challenging situation, according to presenters and presentations at the conference. The Rendlesham Forest incident at a U.S. air base in the U.K. and UFO crashes around the U.S.-Mexican border were also discussed. Cattle mutilations and human abductions, including group abductions, were examined as well. Apparently, I don't know, did they have time? Was the Winnipeg UFO crash discussed or not? And by the way, we're just a couple of months away from the big reveal, the supposed Roswell slides, I believe coming up on May 2nd, if I recall correctly, the big release party in Mexico. It's going to be a very interesting day, as I talked about in great detail last week after following up a lot on all of the different stories on the Roswell slides. I am skeptical that the day after the release of this information, anything in our world will have changed. I just don't know how this changes anything. Great, we've got some awesome photos, apparently. I mean, we'll find out. Maybe they're not that awesome after all. But we've got some mysterious photographs, and to me, it is, can't remember who put it this way, but whoever said it, it is the UFO version of the Patterson-Gimlin film. If it is as good as everybody says it is, that's all it is. Patterson-Gimlin film hasn't changed the world. It is simply given a lot of Bigfoot hunters a reason to go out there in the woods and keep looking. But has it really changed anything? No, and I don't expect the Roswell slides to either. And I wonder what people said of the Roswell slides at this Phoenix conference on UFOs. Maybe we'll talk to Keith a little bit about this on the after show tonight, immediately following this show. While some speakers perceived alleged visitors as hostile and dangerous, others put forth accounts of advanced and benevolent beings who want to help the human race survive and develop. In fact, we may be facing several kinds of visitors that will require intelligence on our part to understand and deal with, the audience was told. So there you go. We'll talk to Keith a little bit more about this. I know that Bob Lazar was there. I believe that George Knapp was there as well. In fact, I think that there was an interview by George Knapp of Bob Lazar. So that certainly would have been interesting. If you've ever listened to the Art Bell shows, Bob Lazar has been talked about on that program for years and years and years, dating back to the late 80s, in fact. And certainly very interesting story that he tells about allegedly working at Area 51. And I believe his story is that he helped back engineer alien craft at S4, as it was called. So that took place at this conference, and a lot more as well. There is a big article on this if you want to head up to jointrecon.studygroup.blogspot.co.uk, or I'm sure if you just Google Phoenix Conference on UFOs, it'll probably take you to this website as well. Got this article here from the Sun Journal, which is, I believe, in Maine, and it's not really a shocking article. It's sort of talking about how the folks from Finding Bigfoot are going to be heading to Maine in April. And it is interesting because two things, actually. I've always enjoyed Finding Bigfoot. I mean, they never find Bigfoot, but I always do enjoy the show for the most part, especially as the seasons have worn on. I find all of the individuals involved, many of them are likable in their own way. Bobo is certainly very likable. Cliff, obviously, and Renee. Whatever you want to say about Matt Moneymaker, and if you're in the Bigfoot community, a lot of people have said a lot of things about Matt Moneymaker. But it's a fun, I find it to be a very harmless show. It's wacky. Every now and then there's something, but I do enjoy the show. I've watched all of them. In fact, I have a ritual. I will tell you all this right now. I have a ritual when Finding Bigfoot is airing on television. On Sunday nights, I will sit down late in the evening after all of the rest of my radio work is done, and I will grab a carton of mint chocolate chip ice cream, and like a five-year-old, I will grab a bottle of Magic Shell. For those of you that don't know what Magic Shell is, God forbid you don't know what Magic Shell is. Magic Shell is like chocolate syrup, but when you put it on your ice cream, it hardens into a shell. It's the best. So anyway, I sit down with my mint chip ice cream and my Magic Shell, and I watch Finding Bigfoot, and I enjoy it every single Sunday night. So the moral of the story is, this article here alerts us that, number one, there is going to be another season of Finding Bigfoot. They're filming it. They're going to Maine. I'm sure they're going to all sorts of different places. But I am sad to report that in the caption here on this article, it reads, and I quote, "The cast of Animal Planet's reality TV show Finding Bigfoot, Renee Holland, James Bobo Fay, Matt Moneymaker, and Cliff Brackman, will be in Maine in April shooting an episode for the new final season." Apparently, Finding Bigfoot has finally come to an end, and they've got apparently one more season to find him. Otherwise, I guess when the show moves into syndication, I don't know, they'll have to remain it. Never Found Bigfoot, it'll be called in syndication once the first run episodes have run their course. I sure hope they find him, but I'm not crossing my fingers. So there you go. They're heading to Maine. If you're in Maine, you should probably pay attention, because you may have a chance to show up at the International Cryptozoology Museum run by Lauren Coleman. I believe he is going to be the host of the famous town hall meeting that they always like to host on the show. They're hoping to gather a group of 25 or so. I certainly hope they draw more than 25, let me tell you that. So if you're in Maine, you might want to check that out, because that is potentially coming your way. This is a strange report. I believe I first saw this on The Anomalist, and we've got to get some guys from The Anomalist back on this show. We've done so in the past, but they were Chris Savia, I believe, was on the show. He's a great guest, and we'll try and get him on again. But I'm going to read this article here in just a moment after this phone call. Two Native Americans spot, of all things, a headless humanoid in Texas. That doesn't sound good. But first, let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? Hello there.
Loser. Come on.
You're on the air. What's going on?
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
How's it going?
Alrighty. So I called in, I guess, about 2 months ago, and we had a banshee conversation. You remember about that?
I do remember that conversation, in fact. You had a lot of stuff going on.
Yes, and you wanted me to call back. So now that I'm back again from Ireland, I want to do
an update.
You know what I mean? Get more into it. Yes.
An update on the situation. So what's going on?
Exactly. So what happened in my family is a lot of our cows started to die.
Started to die?
Cows.
Oh, cows. Oh.
Cows.
Okay.
Yes. And one cow specifically was only used for milk. The rest were used for, other things, such as, building other cows.
Sure.
And, milk, whatnot. And so all of a sudden at one night, it was very late at night, and I was probably the youngest one. I was about 12, 12 years old at the time. I'm now 30 years old. But I remember it vividly.
So this was a while ago.
First time. Yeah, oh, yes. It was in the early 90s, probably about 93.
Okay.
So right around that time, all of a sudden, I was getting put up to bed, and I slept in a house I had no idea was. Everything was crinkly. Everything was old. I slept in probably about a 3,000-year-old house. So, like, it was in the middle of a farm. There wasn't much there. So, I mean, we had, like, four TV channels.
It's about as unfortunate as it gets for a kid that age.
Oh, a lot worse than that. But, yeah, all I was going to say was, I mean, the scream, the banshee is like anything I've ever heard before. I've heard people screaming from getting stabbed. I've heard people getting shot. I've heard, like, torturous things. I've heard people getting, I don't even want to get into it. But, yeah, I mean, that was by far the most, it actually hurts your inner ear, like, to where you almost go deaf.
You know, I think you talked about the banshee the last time you were on the show, and obviously for people that are new listeners, I don't expect you to recreate the sound of the banshee, but
I can't.
Yeah. What could you compare it to? I mean, is there a certain animal? Is there, I mean, how can you relate this to us, what a banshee sounds like?
An animal? Okay, an animal would be,
or a human. I mean, what does it sound like?
All right, if you grabbed the top of the nose of a pterodactyl to where it couldn't breathe out of its front of its mouth, but leave, like, the jawline and the, like, the air open, yet puncture the side of a pterodactyl, and just kind of drag it down so you would get that kind of, like, when anything falls, kind of sound.
Sure.
That's kind of what it would look like.
I can't really quite relate to the pterodactyl.
Like very much gorsome, though. Like, very much like you knew that there was, like, pieces of meat or, like, something like that. It sounded, like, floppy. Like, it was very floppy where you were supposed to sound something like that.
Now, where did you live again?
I lived in Cork, Ireland.
Okay. That's right. Now, so I've often wondered, I'm going to ask this question this way. I have always wondered about, you know, I don't know if there is such a thing as Bigfoot, okay? But what I find interesting about Bigfoot is,
I completely believe in Bigfoot 100%.
Okay, but let me ask you this question. So what I find weird is, if there is no such thing as Bigfoot, and it's just a bunch of people, and they're doing mistaken identity, and whatever the case might be, why are there certain places with woods where there has never been a report of a Bigfoot? To me, if it's just people making...
Well, that's a simple question. That's a simple question, because obviously people don't want you to know about, like, those kind of areas. Or they're hiding them off, or they're covering them before anybody else can find them.
No, but I'm just saying, like, there are places in this world with woods where nobody has ever reported a Bigfoot. Isn't that strange? Like, shouldn't they be everywhere there's woods if people are just making up stories?
Oh, well, there should be. I mean, but I'm sure that there obviously are. I mean, I don't necessarily think that, you know, something like, I don't know. I got to say, there is something in Mothman. But I don't believe in all of that kind of conspiracy. Yeah, I definitely don't. So
the tie-in that I have is, you were in Ireland, so of course you heard a banshee.
Right.
Why don't people hear the banshee elsewhere? What is the banshee? Why is it only in Ireland?
Actually, let me take that back. They have heard the banshee, but it was only down in, like, Louisiana, I do believe.
So we've got now Ireland and Louisiana is the only place that people have heard the banshee.
I don't know. As far as my concern, people that have been able to, like, recollect it are those two places. I'm sure that, I mean, I don't know. Let's see, deathly ghosts that scream. Maybe you would have one again. Mississippi would be another state. I don't know.
So wasn't the story, I don't remember all the details from your last call, but when somebody heard the banshee, wasn't that like a, like someone's going to die now?
Right, directly.
Directly. So how many times did you hear the banshee, and how many times was that followed up by somebody dying?
I heard the banshee twice, and only one thing died, and it was our cow that we got the milk from.
Okay, so the other time
we lived on a farm, and we didn't get milk from anything. Like we lived very outside the suburbs. Like there was no cars, there was no anything like that. We basically, that was it. And so when we heard the banshee, that's when everyone kind of flipped out because the cow died, and that was our only way to get milk. You can't make milk, you can't make butter. So you can't make butter. You get what I'm saying?
So we could presume that when you heard the banshee, probably somebody else did as well, and unfortunately that person probably knew somebody who died?
Oh, I know other people did, because my two cousins and my grandmother told me to stay in the room and go to sleep, and all three of them rang out, and my two uncles that were a lot bigger than me were like, you know, they work on the farm and whatnot, just started lifting bales like, hey, and like going out, and my grandmother took a donkey, which, yeah, you know, you take a donkey sometimes, and you wouldn't realize it like a horse, but you do in Ireland, and so like took it a different direction, but yeah, I guess they were looking to see what was going on, because it killed a lot of animals. We just want to make sure that our livestock wasn't killed.
Okay, so when they heard the banshee, they went outside to corral up the animals. They weren't going out there to find the banshee.
Right, they just want to make sure our animals were okay.
Now, what did the banshee allegedly look like?
Because they already knew the banshee was there.
Sure. What did the banshee allegedly look like?
Allegedly, because I've never seen it.
Yeah, what did people say?
My grandmother has seen it.
Your grandmother had seen it.
Yeah.
What did she say it looked like?
Pretty much like a 6-foot-tall ghost on a horse, but the horse was also a ghost with drapes of like blue and white, like see-through moss, where you really couldn't see like a face. And it had some kind of weapon is all she could describe, but it screamed like all hell. And like if she screamed, like you weren't able to, you know, you had to cover your.
So it was a human of some sort.
I don't think it was a human.
Well, I won't say a human, but it would have resembled
She threw rocks at it, and it didn't go away.
Okay, so but it resembled a ghostly human. It didn't look like, for example, a bear.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Very fascinating. And so those were. And so, what did she do when she saw it? She just ran, or she threw the rocks and then hit the bricks?
Basically, yeah. Basically, just turned around and ran.
So essentially, she was lucky to be alive.
And wasn't chased. It didn't chase her or anything like that. It just stand there in the same spot. I remember her telling me that she ran about, I don't know, 300 feet and looked back, and it was still just standing right there.
Man.
But then she like got back, like all the way back, because it went in a straight line. It's not like it was curves and whatnot. It was in a straight line, like on a driveway.
What year was this? Do you remember?
She turned around, it's completely gone. Huh?
Did she tell you what year this was that she saw this banshee?
It would have to be in about 1943.
Somewhere around 1943. Wow. That's amazing. Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for the call. We're running low on time here, but I do really appreciate that update. And give me a call again. And if you got more stories, let me know. We're running low on time here on the program, everybody. We're about to wrap it up for this program, but do not touch that internet dial. We are going to be joined as soon as this show goes off the air by Keith Rowland. We're going to be doing a special After Dark Radio After Show. Keith and I are going to be talking about all of the latest news regarding the Dark Matter Radio Network. And what does that entail? Well, is Art Bell coming back? Is Art Bell coming back in July? What is going on with the status of his return? What is going on with the issues involving all of his music? Everything that Keith is allowed to say, he is going to say immediately after this show goes off the air on the After Dark Radio After Show. I want to thank everybody for listening here today. Don't forget, our guest was Denise Roth. And if you loved the interview, it's going to be replaying on the Dark Matter Radio Network on Saturday. And if you're listening to this on a replay, guess what? You can listen live every Friday night at 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern, here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. We have a lot of really great guests coming up over the next God knows how long. I think, as I noted, I'm booked up all the way through May, and I've got even more guests that I've got to get booked, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And if you want more from me, Monday through Friday, and I'll be talking about this more on the after show, Monday through Friday, if you're a wrestling fan, Monday through Friday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Sports Zone, the American Forces Network, the Cable Radio Network, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio. It's available on iTunes for subscribers as well. You can listen live on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com or SportsByline.com. You can listen to me every day, Monday through Friday, talking pro wrestling. Sundays as well at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. So if you're a fan of wrestling, what are you waiting for? Check out those shows. They are free. And of course, for subscribers, you get the downloads immediately afterwards as well. And we're going to be back next week with a brand new show. Don't forget, in just a moment, if you're listening live, you can hear the After Dark Radio After Show with myself and Keith Rowland talking all of the news from the Dark Matter Radio Network. So make sure you check that out. And for everybody else, thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. After Dark Radio here on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network.
Out for the Banshee.